Well, good morning. Welcome again. My name is Matt. I have been known by some to spend lots of time in a given week at coffee shops. And by a lot of time, I mean so much time that I have a complicated formula for knowing when to take a location out of rotation so I don't overstay my welcome at any one particular place. I'm sure the workers at these places have a name for me, coffee shop, squatter, something. I don't know what it is they call me behind my back. When you're working in a public place like that, though, there's lots of activity. There's constant, noise. People are coming and going. And I actually run into lots of people that I know, and they see me, and the question is always, Matt, how do you get work done? You're working on your sermon, you're doing stuff, studying. How do you get work done in a place like this? Because there's tons of distractions. I could never get anything done if I were working here. And I always think, well, if it weren't for you talking to me right now, I'm kidding, that's a joke. But I actually do have a pretty simple solution. I spend an embarrassing amount of money on headphones. These are my latest pair, the Skull Candy. That's nice. Rock Nation Aviators. I've had several pairs of Bose headphones. I'm like a headphones aficionado, The Bose ones aren't cheap, as you might guess. I've had the in-ear kind, but those hurt my ears. This pair will probably last me for about a year, and then I'll be on to new ones. Now, when I have these bad boys on, I got my music playing. I can't hear anything. I can hear myself right now. I'm just kidding. Now, I'm well aware that I look pretty ridiculous, wearing these. So I just went ahead and bought the brown and gold ones just to kind of go with it. But when I'm wearing these, I don't hear distractions. Things around me don't bother me. People will come up to me, and if I don't see them and they say hi, I forget about it. I don't hear them. Everything is blocked out. The noise is blocked out. When I have these headphones on, I can basically filter out reality all around me. Now, I bring this up because I feel like at times, as a pastor, and actually you've probably all experienced this as well, I've met people who are wearing a set of these, and they've plugged this into something I don't understand. They're hearing something I'm not hearing. And I say this based on their decisions. Have you met people like this? They do really dumb stuff, and you want to say, who is it you're plugged into? Whose voice are you listening to? That never worked for anyone. What makes you think it's going to work suddenly for you? It's as if people, and I say people like it's not us, but we'll get to us in just a minute. It's as if people are listening to voices, taking in information, listening to someone that allows them to ignore reality. They're plugged into something we can't hear. And I say people, but this is true of all of us, isn't it? And we can all look back at some point in your life and on advice you wish you hadn't plugged into. We can all look back on information we wish we hadn't received. Or maybe we wish we could go back and dial out certain voices altogether. Or maybe dial in a voice or a piece of information. Because at the time we were plugged into something that allowed us to tune out the voice of reason, the voice of wisdom. A few months ago, Liz and I were at a conference, and one of the speakers, Andy Stanley, he was giving an illustration, and he gave this quote almost as an aside, and it just stood out to me. This is really, really good. He said, what and who you listen to will influence, and sometimes determine, what you do. But what and who you listen to will influence what you do. I told you when we started this series on wisdom, I don't consider myself to be, particularly wise. So I'm appealing to the Bible, also to other people who've helped me grow in this area. And Andy Stanley's been a big influence in my life in this area. And so I just want to give credit where credit is due. I'm big time indebted to him for this particular message. What and who you listen to will influence what you do. Now, we think this is just for the people, the generation coming along after us, right? When we look at teens and we think, boy, you really, really ought to be careful who they listen to. And when we're teens, anyone over 20, we unplug from them, and we basically plug into, for the most part, our friends. It's just kind of natural. But this is true in every stage of our lives. Maybe you remember when you went to college for some of us, and your freshman year, you had professors who were really, really smart, and they're saying stuff you've never heard, stuff your parents never told you. And you go home, and it's like, some of you, after your freshman year, you went home for summer break, and you were like the smartest person in your whole town. And we have a way of taking this in, and we maybe unplug from values, or we walk away from beliefs we kind of were linked into before, because this person is just so smart. Or maybe you're here, and as a young adult, you're in your 20s, you're in your 30s. It's very tempting to plug into what the banks, what the credit card companies say. And they say, look, give us all your financial information, and we, because we love you and because we care for you, we will decide how much money you should borrow. You can trust us. And you're thinking, I gave them like so much information. Like, I told them everything about my income and my debt and my student loans. Surely they're not going to loan me more money than I can manage. They're not going to give me more debt than I can handle. So we plug into culture in that way. Throughout our lives, we're constantly tempted to connect to these sources. And the truth is, no matter how old you are, no matter what stage of life you're in, we're all plugged in somewhere listening to someone. We have the ability in all of us to cancel out not the noise, but the voice of wisdom and common sense. There's something in all of us that eventually wants to plug in to hear what it is that we want to hear. If you have a Bible, I want to invite you to turn with me to 2 Chronicles chapter 18. We're going to explore a lengthy passage here. If you turn there, that would be great. Today I want to talk to you about the people that we listen to. Now, before we start reading 2 Chronicles, I got to give you the context. It's really, really important. I think we have the page number for this if you have a Bible. We've covered this this context before, but just to refresh your memory so we're all on the same page, about 930-something B.C., the nation of Israel split into two kingdoms. And so there was the northern kingdom, and then, everyone pay attention, there was the southern kingdom. Good, you know this. Now, the northern kingdom retained the name Israel, and the southern kingdom was called, anyone know? Judah, right. At the time of this story, the northern kingdom, Israel, had a king, and his name was Ahab. Bonus question, anyone know Ahab's wife's name? What? Jezebel. See, you guys don't even need me. And the southern kingdom also had a king, and the southern kingdom, Judah's king, was a guy named Jehoshaphat. In the opening scene of this story, we discover that Jehoshaphat and Ahab had made an alliance together. And what I hope to bring to light through this story is something you've already experienced. And you may not have put it like this before, but you have seen this 1,000 times in your lives, in the lives of the people around you. When you make an alliance with someone, an alliance that can be, you joined a fraternity, so you're now in an alliance with those guys. It could be a partnership in a business. It could be a club at school. It could be a team. It could be an organization. You're on the board with people. But listen, anytime you're in alliance with someone, they gain leverage in your life. When you're in that kind of a connection, there's a sense in which you plug into their worldview. Their words just weigh more. Now, we don't like to think of it like this, because we like to think that, you know, I'm independent and we're our own person. We do our own thing. Nobody tells us. Nobody influences us. But when you have any kind of formal or even informal alliance, they automatically gain a voice into your life they didn't have before. And that's how the story begins. Let's pick this up with verse 1. Now Jehoshaphat had great wealth and honor, and he allied himself with Ahab by marriage, which he didn't need to do, but that's how the story begins. Some years later, he went down to see Ahab in Samaria. Samaria was the capital of Israel, the northern kingdom. Ahab, king of Israel, slaughtered many sheep and cattle for him and the people with him, and urged him to attack Ramoth-Gilead. Now, Ramoth-Gilead was a border town on the border of the northern kingdom Israel and a country to the east called Aram. It was a little town, but it was a crossroads, and so there was all this kind of merchant activity. There was a lot of wealth in the town, and the Arameans, they knew this very well, and so Ramoth-Gilead was very heavily fortified. So Ahab's thinking, you know what? We need to go over and get that town. We need to redraw the border. I just don't want to do it alone. So he invites King Jehoshaphat of Judah to go with him into battle. Verse 3, and the king of Israel asked Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, will you go with me against Ramoth-Gilead? In other words, will you join your army with my army and let's go over and do this? Second part of verse 3, Jehoshaphat replied, I am as you are, and my people as your people. We will join you in the war. Jehoshaphat says, let's saddle up. Now, this is kind of weird, you know, in our culture. You know, what are you doing today? I don't know. Want to go to war? I mean, it's just a different culture, but that's how it was back then. Before they ride off, though, together to fight, Jehoshaphat asks a very, very irritating question. Verse 4, Jehoshaphat also said to the king of Israel, first, seek the counsel of the Lord. That's like the equivalent of saying, now, Ahab, have you prayed about this? Ahab, have you prayed about this decision to go attack Ramoth-Gilead? Like I said, that's annoying when someone asks us that question. We've already made up our minds what it is we want to do. Ahab, he's ready to go to war, and Jehoshaphat says, I'm with you, but we should first inquire of the Lord and see what he might have to say about this. Look at verse 5. So the king of Israel brought together the prophets, 400 men, and asked them, shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead or shall I not? Ahab says, all right, hold on. You know, he brings all these prophets into his palace throne room. There's 400 of them. So you got to kind of picture that. Now, all these prophets are on the king's payroll. I mean, they get a check from the king every other week. And Ahab asked them, should I go into this battle or not? Yes or no? Look what they say next. Go, they answered, for God will give it into the king's hand. Ahab turns to Jehoshaphat. Okay, there you have it. Are you happy now? Now get your armor ready. Let's go. Well, you can read between the lines. Jehoshaphat's like, okay, that seemed kind of quick. I mean, that kind of felt like they knew the answer to the question before we even asked the question. Look at verse 6. But Jehoshaphat asked, is there no longer a prophet of the Lord here whom we can inquire of? In other words, they came to that awful quick. Isn't there anybody else who like has the voice of wisdom? Anyone else who we really feel like has a connection with God we can trust? Maybe someone not on the payroll, that would be good, who can be a little more objective about this decision. Verse 7, the king of Israel, that's Ahab, answered Jehoshaphat, there is still one through whom we can inquire of the Lord, but I hate him. Because he never prophesies anything good about me, but always bad. He is Micaiah, son of Imlah. The Bible's funny, isn't it, sometimes? I find a lot of humor. Maybe it's just me, but I hate that guy. There's this one other guy, but he's not going to like this idea, so I didn't invite him. And that's like saying, did you ask your dad? No, I didn't ask my dad. Are you nuts? I already know what he's going to say. Well, did you talk to your coach about this? No, I didn't talk to my coach. I know what she'll say about this. Have you prayed about this? I just want to find somebody to agree with what it is I want to do. I'm trying to filter out reality. I want someone to say, that's a great idea. And already, as you read this story, there's a sense in which we can all identify with this impulse that Ahab has. Because every one of us here, maybe in the past, maybe right now, you're about to make a big decision. And there's a part of you that's like, you know, I want to do the right thing. I want to do the wise thing. I want to do the financially responsible thing. I want to make a good choice in this relationship or with my family. I really do. But, and let me stop you, there are some people in your life, and you know who they are. If I were to recommend you talk to them about this, your pushback immediately would be like, oh, no, I already know what they're going to say. I mean, they're just going to come like, you know, crash my party. And as silly as Ahab looks at this point in the story, we perhaps look no less silly to God and to the people around us, who know current reality as it actually is, reality that we're trying our best to avoid. In the end of verse 7, the king should not say such a thing, Jehoshaphat replied. Look at verse 8. So the king of Israel called one of his officials and said, bring Micaiah, son of Imlah, at once. Ahab's like, all right, fine, whatever. Basically, they send out for this guy, Micaiah, the lone voice of wisdom in like the whole kingdom. And while they send for him, the next few verses go on and describe, all the prophets of Ahab start this big pep rally. I mean, really, they're like cheering and they're running around and they're all this commotion. They got like these horns on their head, okay? And they're going around saying, you're going to gore, you know, the Arameans. That's funny. I mean, they got their pom-poms. They have their t-shirt cannons, you know? They're like totally doing flips and all kinds of crazy stuff. It's a huge pep rally on how bad Israel and the army of Israel and the army of Judah is going to destroy the Arameans. Now, skip down to verse 12. The messenger who had gone to summon Micaiah said to him, look, the other prophets, all 400 of them, without exception, are predicting success for the king. Let your word agree with theirs. Speak favorably. So the messenger goes to get Micaiah, who wasn't invited to the first group with the 400. The messenger says, all the other guys, without exception, I mean, they're calling this an easy victory for King Ahab. Word of advice, you might want to agree with them. In other words, Micaiah, hey, before you go in there, just so you know, this is like a pep rally. There's a lot of excitement. We got a lot of momentum here. Our team's gonna win, you know. Everyone's pumped. So don't go in there and mess this up, you know. Just tell King Ahab what you know the king wants to hear. Again, as people looking in on this ancient story, we think, how foolish. I mean, how ridiculous. I mean, why would you want someone to change what they're going to tell you based on what you want to hear if, in fact, that person actually has information that you need? But for some of us, you right now are in the middle of doing just that. You guys ever notice how easy it is to find someone to agree with you, your crazy ideas? Yeah, it's so easy. You know, you're interested in someone and all your friends are like, oh, he's so cute, she's so hot, you know, you got 400 cheerleaders in the sidelines going, date him, yeah, you know, marry her. And like there's one person you haven't told about the relationship and you don't really want them to know because they're liable to ask a really good question and so you avoid them. Or maybe you're here and you're just about to make a deal or do a partnership thing or you're about to make a purchase. I don't know what's going on in your world. But maybe you're here and you're right at the edge and you've kind of let it filter out to the people you want to hear about it. You want them to hear about it. But there are some really wise people you haven't asked. And you haven't asked them on purpose because you're afraid to plug into them. You're committed to filtering out to the best of your ability the voice of wisdom, perhaps even the voice of God. Maybe you've had this experience where you've been influenced by someone. You know, when you're in alliance with someone, a friendship, whatever that is, you're influenced in a direction, and then you go over to somebody else, and you're excited, and you can't wait, and you think it's the best idea ever. You go over to the third party, the neutral, objective person who isn't connected to so-and-so that you're connected with. And you tell so-and-so about it, you're like, this is the best thing. Hey, and you preface it with, I know this sounds kind of crazy, I know this never works for anybody else, but, you know, and you tell this person, and it and they're not influenced by this friend you have, and it falls flat, like just thud, you know, and it doesn't go over like you thought. They ask like a really hard question. And so what do? We say, oh, you know, never mind, you know, you just don't understand. They understand perfectly. It actually is a crazy thing, and they're just thinking more clearly than we are in those moments. Verse 13, but Micaiah said, as surely as the Lord lives, I can tell him only what my God says. Let's go to verse 14. When he arrived, the king asked him, Micaiah, shall we go to war against Ramoth-Gilead, or shall I not? Attack and be victorious, he answered, for they will be given into your hand. So Micaiah is looking at all the cheerleaders, all the people going, attack, 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 rah, rah, rah. And Micaiah just kind of smiles and sarcastically says, oh, king, I think this is a great idea. And the king, looking at him, at his expression, realizes Micaiah is like mocking him. Look at verse 15. The king said to him, how many times must I make you swear to tell me nothing but the truth in the name of the Lord? Okay, look, we both know I don't want you here. But now that you're here, go on, you know, you made it all this way. What do you have to say, Micaiah? What do you think? Next slide, in verse 16, Micaiah answered, I saw all Israel scattered on the hills with sheep, like sheep without a shepherd. And the Lord said, these people have no master. Let each one go home in peace. Now, this whole sheep without a shepherd bit, that kind of sounds like something Jesus would talk about, like in a parable. It sounds really pastoral. But here's what King Ahab heard. He heard this. Your army is going to be scattered because the king isn't there. What he heard was a prediction, a prophecy of his own death. Because the sheep are like the soldiers. The soldiers are scattered and they can't find the shepherd. And Ahab's thinking, wait a minute, I'm the shepherd. And Micaiah is telling me that if I go to war, the troops are all going to come roaming back home, scattered, but I'm not coming with them. Micaiah prophesies, Ahab, you can go to war if you want. But if you do, pack your stuff, because you're not coming back. Look at verse 17, I love this. The king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, didn't I tell you that he never prophesies anything good about me, but only bad? And look, what'd I tell you? I told you this would happen. I got these 400 guys all up in here, and we got this all this momentum, and it's a big pep rally. We're all excited, and we bring this guy in. Every time we bring him in, he like totally rains on my parade. So what does Ahab decide to do? Skip down to verse 25. Verse 25, the king of Israel then ordered, take Micaiah, send him back to Amon, the ruler of the city, and to Joash, the king's son, and say, this is what the king says. Put this fellow in prison and give him nothing but bread and water until I return safely. Ahab says, I don't want word getting out that I might not be coming back safely. I don't want the army hearing about this. I don't want anyone outside of this room to hear this. So take him, gag him, pick him up, put him in prison. Don't let him out until I get back safely. Verse 27, Micaiah declared, if you ever return safely, the Lord has not spoken through me. Then he added, mark my words, all you people. Only I think it was a, mark my words. You know, he's yelling this in the palace throne room. Everyone else is kind of, you know, stunned and scared as they gag him and take him out. I mean, we're looking in on this story, and it doesn't matter how old we are or our stage of life. It doesn't matter if you read the Bible or if you're a Christian or what it is you think about God. This is like watching a movie, isn't it? And we can see what's coming. We already know that in this story, the voice of the crowd is not the voice to listen to. We already know that the people who have something to gain by telling the king what the king wants to hear are the wrong people to listen to. We know that the voice of wisdom has been bound and gagged and put in prison. The king has made up his mind. The king's going to do what the king wants to do regardless of common sense. He's filtered out reality. He's filtered out wisdom and the voice of God. And without even telling you how this story ends, you can probably predict. You can probably guess. It's obvious. See, I don't think our stories are any less obvious. See, I think I could drop into your life, and you could drop into my life, and you could look at the decisions I'm about to make, the voices I've filtered out, the other voices I've plugged into, and you could say, Matt, you know, you're the pastor and all, but that is it. You're about to make a really stupid decision. And I don't know where you're getting your advice. I don't know who you're listening to, but it's the wrong people. And I bet I could drop into your life, and it would be no less clear to me. But let's just finish the story anyway. Verse 28. So the king of Israel and Jehoshaphat, king of Judah, went up to Ramoth Gilead. They loaded up their armies, you know, got everyone going, headed over to the border. Now this next part, you got to see this. This is when you're thinking, Jehoshaphat, whoa, time out. What are you thinking, man? You have hitched your horse. No, you've hitched your wagon to the wrong horse. However that goes. Verse 29, the king of Israel said to Jehoshaphat, and this is really, really important, I will enter the battle in disguise, but you wear your royal robes. Whoa, what? Yeah, Jehoshaphat, okay, here's the plan. When we go to war, thanks for coming with me and thanks for risking your life. Thank you for gathering your army to fight. But I'm thinking, when we go to war, I'm just going to dress like a common soldier, you know, kind of blend in. But you go ahead and wear your royal robes. In fact, wear your crown. Why don't you polish up your armor real nice? Actually, if you could carry in some big banners, you know, as you go in, that would be perfect. I want Ahab, I want the king of Aram, rather the enemy, to know exactly where you are, but I don't want him to know where I am. And Jehoshaphat's like, what about the 400 guys going, attack, attack, attack? What about all this momentum? What about all this courage and this bravado? And back at the palace, you were so confident that this is what we needed to do. Now you're telling me you're not even willing to step up and be the king in battle? You're not even willing to lead your own troops? Now, here's why this is so important. Because what was going on inside of Ahab in this moment is what's going on inside of some of us. It's what's going to go on inside of some of us 6 months from now. It's what maybe went on inside some of us 6 months ago. Even though Ahab had been very convincing on the outside, even though he'd rallied all the people on the payroll around him, even though he convinced Jehoshaphat, even though he silenced the prophet, in his heart, the words of Micaiah rang true. And Ahab was not absolutely confident on the inside, although he appeared to be pretty confident on the outside. And when it came right down to risking his life on the battlefield, in his mind, he's seeing sheep scattered on the hillside without a shepherd. The sheep are the army wandering all over the hills, and he's the shepherd, and the shepherd's gone. Let's just talk for a minute, like kind of you and me. Isn't this true? I mean, you can like argue your wife into silence. You can argue your husband into silence. I mean, you can make your parents just like throw their hands up in the air and say, oh, well, you know, I give up. I mean, you got everyone convinced. You got the board saying, you're the leader. Okay, fine. You're the boss. Whatever. We can be so persuasive, can't we? We can be so assured, so calm. And we got PowerPoint, and we got stories, and we have illustrations, and we have a special song. We got everybody convinced, but in your heart, in your mind, there's a doubt. And that doubt is linked to that one person. Those two people who had nothing to gain by telling you what you wanted to hear, and so they told you what you needed to hear. And you know they told you the truth. The next part of this verse. So the king of Israel. This is the king. I get the next part. The king of Israel said, I'm sorry. The king of Israel disguised himself. This is Ahab. Disguised himself. I mean, come on. And went into battle. And we want to go, Jehoshaphat, what are you doing? Time out. Do you know why Jehoshaphat went ahead with the plan and went into battle? Because we can be blind to the influence that the people we've allied ourselves to, we can be blind to the influence they have in our lives. And that creates momentum. And oftentimes, that momentum is so strong, it's so powerful, that even when everything else around us, you know, finally starts, everything around us says, this is a bad idea. We get caught up in the emotion of the moment. I can only guess that Jehoshaphat, as he puts all this together, at this point has some second thoughts, but he's in too deep. Have you ever found yourself moving in a direction away from wisdom, the wise thing to do? And like the further that you got away from the wise choice, the more momentum picked up. Maybe for you, you got to the table and you're about to sign a contract or do a deal or buy a house or business, whatever it is for you. And by the time you get to like sign on the dotted line, there's all this momentum pushing you to just go ahead and do it. And you get there and the other attorney says, oh wait, before we do this, there's just one small thing that's changed. You're like, wait, what? If you would have brought this up at the beginning of the negotiation, we wouldn't even be here right now. But now, we're at the end, there's all this momentum pushing us along, and there's this pressure, and people are waiting outside, and okay, I guess, let's just do this, and we'll fix it later. You know that feeling? That's where Jehoshaphat is. The people you've allied yourself with, they're able to speak into your life, leverage their words in a way that other people cannot. And the further that you go in this, the more momentum you gain. Let's finish the story. Verse 30. Now the king of Aram had ordered his chariot commanders, do not fight with anyone, small or great, except the king of Israel. In other words, let's find Ahab, let's kill him. Verse 31, when the chariot commander saw Jehoshaphat, the only guy out there wearing a crown and king's stuff, they thought, this is the king of Israel. There's Ahab. So they turned to attack him. But Jehoshaphat cried out, and the Lord helped him. So God essentially bailed him out. Jehoshaphat almost lost his life by being in alliance with Ahab. Look at the next verse, 33. But someone drew his bow at random and hit the king of Israel, Ahab, between the breastplate and the scale armor. I love this. Part of the problem is we ignore the voice of wisdom, and then we say things like, don't worry, honey, you know, I'll be careful. Don't worry, mom, dad, I'll be careful. Don't worry, you know, board, staff, group, I'll be cautious. I realize I'm not taking good advice, but let me tell you what I'm going to do to counter the fact that I'm not taking good advice. I'm going to be careful. Well, then, in that case, I mean, why didn't you just tell me in the first place? If you're going to be cautious, okay. Ahab says, I realize I'm not taking the prophet's advice. But watch this. I'm not going to dress like a king. They'll never know who I am. And the Bible tells us that some archer, probably 200 or 300 yards away, lifted his bow and fired at random into a mass of troops. And he hit King Ahab between the breastplate and the scale armor. The king told the chariot driver, wheel around, get me out of the fighting, I've been wounded. All day long the battle raged, and the king of Israel propped himself up in his chariot facing the Arameans until evening. Then at sunset, he died. He didn't have to. Ahab lost his life because he wouldn't listen to the right voice. Jehoshaphat nearly lost his life for being in alliance with Ahab. Look, God has been gracious to you, and God has been gracious to me. Not by sending like 100 people, you know, wise people into your life, but because every time it seems like we're on the edge, we're about to go over, every time it seems like there's someone, grandma, you know, mom, the guy at work, your small group leader, there's someone there like the prophet Micaiah who's going, I know what everyone else is saying, but, and when they say that word, in our hearts, we know. They're right. We know it. The question is, what are we going to do with that? You and I, we can filter out reality. Or we can take these off and make decisions based on what's actually happening in us, around us. I mean, isn't it true that the thing that we least want to hear many times is the thing that we need to hear the most? Isn't it true that the people that we least want to hear from, at least generally speaking, it's the person we need to hear from the most? And isn't it true that we all look back and wish we could rewind time and ignore the crowd and take our cue from the one? I want to invite the band just to go ahead and make your way up front here. As we wrap this up, I want to ask a few questions. And if you're in a small group, these would be great questions to talk about as a group. But just to make sure that we're kind of moving in the same direction, I want to ask real quick, question number one, who are you listening to? Who has your ear? Whose advice do you lean into? Question number two, who do you need to quit listening to? I can make that one more specific. Who do the people in your life you trust the most, who've proven over time they love you the most, who do they wish you would quit listening to? Who's your husband or wife wish you'd quit paying so much attention to? Who do your parents wish you would quit listening to? Number three, who should you be listening to? I mean, this is one of the reasons that we value small groups so much, and we hope that you'll get in one. We want people here sitting, not just in rows, but sitting in circles, sitting around a circle with a group of people who hopefully share your values. And you're not writing them a paycheck, and they have nothing to gain by your good decisions or your bad decisions. You just need to be somewhere where you can begin listening to the right people. I mean, there are enough wrong people generally speaking, the crowd, oftentimes the voice of culture we're plugged into. These are not the people we want to take our cue from. Number four, what do you not want to hear but need to? What's that one piece of advice you're totally dodging? You need to hear it. And last question, whose advice are you resisting because you just don't like the individual giving it? Man, oh man, this is a hard one. Who is it that you're avoiding because even though they're saying what you need to hear, they rub you the wrong way, you know, they're not your people, they're not like one of your group, so you're ignoring them. Maybe you know too much about them to listen to them. Maybe you're saying they haven't accomplished as much as me, you know, why should I listen? Who's speaking directly to the issue you need wisdom on and you've discounted their perspective because you've decided you just don't like them? Who and what you listen to at every stage of our lives will influence what we do. I mean, God has given us his word. He's given us his perspective, not because it's interesting or curious, not for our consideration, but he wants our lives to be directed and shaped by wisdom because he loves us. God will speak to you often through other people if you're open. And so my prayer for you, my prayer for me, is that we won't avoid hearing from the people we need to listen to. And we won't avoid the information and the perspective that has the potential to radically redirect our entire lives. I want to invite you to stand with me. We'll pray together, and then we'll sing a final song. Heavenly Father, our prayer this morning is that you would somehow help us to filter out the voices of the crowd. God, in many cases, in many ways, not all, but in many, our culture, what it has to say to us about relationships or finances or what we do for entertainment. I mean, these are not the right voices. God, we want to hear from you. Lord, we don't want to be afraid of what we don't want to hear. God, help us to walk in obedience to you. And Lord, for many of us, at some point in our time together, you've brought a face to our minds. Someone we've been consciously or subconsciously avoiding because we don't want to hear what they have to say. God, help us to consider who we're listening to, who we're taking our cue from. Lord, give us the wisdom to know what to do. And God, please, in those areas where we find ourselves avoiding the voice of wisdom, God, that should be a huge red flag for us. Help us to stop and to see it and to change directions. Give us the courage, Lord, to obey where you're speaking to us specifically now in this moment. Pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen. For a benediction, as you leave, may you consider who you're listening to. May you receive the gift of the wisdom of God, which oftentimes comes through people. And may you submit your lives to that piece of wisdom, that truth God is generously, graciously making available to you. Amen. Have a great week. Go in peace, and we'll see you next time.